welcome to the Unrestricted Movie Podcast. I'm one of your hosts for this episode, Josh, and I'm here, of course, with Ryan. Say hi to everybody, Ryan.
Hello.
Do we don't have any special guests.
Who talks like that? It's
I don't know.
Isn't it Squiggy from Laverne and Shirley?
Squiggy from
Hello.
Oh, I don't have
any. Or Happy Days. You don't know
the
Squiggy?
Fonz?
No, Squiggy.
Hey.
Anyway.
Look at me, I'm the Fonz. Sorry.
What's up,
well,
Josh?
Yeah, man. That'll be the most laughing we have in this episode, as we're about to start talking about Eyes Wide Shut.
Oh, this film was a riot. I was so many laughs.
Rolling on the floor, you know, like...
I raffled so much, R-O-F-L'd.
Raffling.
Yeah.
Here we go, raffling. How many dad jokes can we throw into this episode, right?
Oh, I don't know. Can't come up with one now.
Well, our listeners are probably thanking us.
Yeah. Yeah, Eyes Wide Shut. Holy shit, what a film.
Dude, I'm still kind of having nightmares about this movie.
Are you? It's a
legit,
scary...
It is, like, jarring.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, I said it before, it's almost a horror film.
I mean, I would put that on the list of horror films if I had to do that.
I think the best horror films for me, the ones that really get me, are the ones that feel like dreams. The ones that feel like a nightmare almost, right?
Mm. Yeah, I get that.
And this film was a definite just like Alice in Wonderland type.
It's like, how is this even real?
Yeah.
You know? I was kind of expecting for Tom Cruise's character to like just wake up at some point. Like, oh, it was just a nightmare.
Right. Him or Alice.
Sure.
Right? Because, so this movie was based on a book.
Oh,
right?
Really?
Okay.
I did not know that.
Based on a book from 1926, and the book was called Dream Story.
Okay.
Right? By Austrian author Arthur Schnitzler. And, you know, it seemed like either character could have woken up from this dream. But yeah, definitely Bill, Tom Cruise's character, he was the main character, the main protagonist.
Mm-hmm.
And it seemed like he was just going down the rabbit hole.
For sure. You know, I just have a question about Bill's character.
Yeah.
Was Tom Cruise really very believable as a doctor to you? Because I was like, Tom Cruise... I'm not really buying him as a doctor. I don't know.
He doesn't play book smart very well, right?
No.
Like, I think he has a lot of street smarts,
yeah.
Just in general. Like, he does good, you know, doing his own stunts and Mission Impossible. And I guess he kind of, you know, he's a spy there, so he's got to be smart. But
I just had a hard time buying the doctor stuff, man.
Yeah, he doesn't seem like he would be a good surgeon or what? He's like a plastic surgeon in this, right?
A plastic surgeon?
Isn't he, or is he like
no,
someone?
No, because he sees women and kids and stuff.
Oh, no, you're right. You're right. I just remember the scene of him checking out the boobs of the woman.
And then Alice, Nicole Kidman's character, like interrogates him about touching other women's boobs and stuff.
No,
as
but
a doctor.
Let's stay on this, like, this atmosphere that this movie creates, this dreamlike atmosphere, because I don't know about you, but this movie brought up a little bit of PTSD that I had relating to my former religion.
Uh-huh.
Don't
all of our movies that we watch do a little bit of that, Ryan?
Yeah. So there are some similarities that I noticed in this movie similarities to the temple ritual.
Sure.
And I don't know if you picked up on any of that.
I mean, there was some chanting going on.
Yeah. Chanting.
Some kneeling. Faces covered stuff a little bit. The circle, there was a circle.
Right, right. No, exactly.
Yeah, I mean,
the chanting, the circles.
Was there an altar? I don't know if there was an altar. I can't quite put a finger on it.
Well, there's the guy sitting in the middle like he's fucking God.
Yeah.
Is he wearing red?
He's
wearing red, right?
The party host, yeah.
Wearing red? All I could think about, there was the one guy wearing all red, and all I could think of was, like, Star Wars. Like, the Imperial Guard.
Right.
But then there's the guy who comes around in the middle who's swinging the thing, and it's obviously very ritualistic, but then he goes over and, like, gives the woman permission to go off.
Right. So,
which is
so
almost
it's
kind
very
of like a
patriarchal, right?
Well, almost like you have to wait to be given your token.
Well, right. The women in the ceremony, I mean, we're just, like, jumping right into it. The women in the ceremony are they're almost like just things, like possessions,
mm-hmm.
like they're just given
they're objectified
to these men. They're
right.
Yes, they're very objective. I mean, they're not wearing clothes.
Right.
So
And they're, like you say, they're given to the men. And that's kind of what happens during the marriage ceremony in the temple.
There is a part.
And in the endowment ceremony, I mean, the occult rituals in the film just reminded me so much about the Masonic and, let's just say, pagan rituals of the temple. So like you say, there's chants.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. There's passwords.
There are, yes,
right?
There are more than one password.
Is there?
There's.
Oh, yeah.
And this password is presented on a slip of paper, a recommend, or in other words, you need to be worthy, right? So aside from the password, you need to be worthy. So you have to have a slip of paper, in other words, a recommend.
How do they determine that? Do they have interviews for this? Like, does the person in charge of the cult ask you if you masturbate before you go in? Like, what?
Well, I just found it interesting that he presented that piece of paper at the gate, which you do at the temple. You present
your
recommend at the gate or the entrance of the temple, right? There's special costumes, right? You have to wear a special costume in the temple. Chanting, there's... a lot of people don't know that in the temple there was a nude bathing ritual that was part of the original endowment ceremony. So there was nudity involved in the original ceremony.
Interesting.
Temple initiates know almost nothing beforehand, right? Because of it being sacred, not secret.
Right.
So you know nothing going in. And participants are committed to swear an oath of secrecy about the ceremonies, right?
It's like
Damn it.
First time in the temple, you're just like Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
You're like looking around like, holy like, what is going on in here? Isn't that, I mean, don't you feel like I'm, like, in Tom Cruise's shoes?
More than that, I felt in the endowment ceremony, what's going on? Like, what's going on, and should I escape? Multiple times.
Right, and it's funny, because there are parts of the endowment ceremony where you have the opportunity to leave.
Mm-hmm.
It's almost like, and there's like little warnings, like in the movie, like Satan breaks the fourth wall and talks about warning you if you don't live up to everything and all of that stuff.
I
and
could probably
Tom's,
quote it verbatim for
I,
you if you need
yeah,
it.
We don't have the need to do that, but. And Tom Cruise's character, Bill, gets warned while he's at the ceremony to just leave.
Yeah.
But for some reason, he just decides to stay.
Out of curiosity. And I think, you know, the saying curiosity killed the cat, I think, you know, just curiosity drives most of us.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, that's how you gain knowledge, through curiosity.
Sure, sure.
But, yeah, some behind-the-scenes facts about this movie. I already told you it was based on a book. This is, you know, we explored one of Kubrick's other films, The Shining.
Right.
I would consider this one... Eyes Wide Shut, and I don't think most people would agree with me. I might be in the minority here, but I would consider Eyes Wide Shut his magnum opus.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
How much? So, can you give me a little bit of a timeline? Because The Shining was 1979?
Yeah.
Right? And Eyes Wide Shut was in the 90s.
So, magnum opus, not necessarily meaning last film. It means greatest work, but
mm-hmm.
it
like
was...
the culmination.
Right, but it was his last film.
Oh, it was.
He died during post-production.
Oh,
he had a heart attack. He 6 days before he died, he showed the quote-unquote final cut of the film to Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman and WB Warner Brothers producers.
Mm-hmm.
There is some debate. A lot of people think that it wasn't his final cut because of how meticulous and perfectionist he was, that he wasn't done editing the film because there was... there were a lot of scenes left on the cutting
room
floor.
Did he cut all of his move? Because I know a lot of directors, don't they have editors?
They have editors,
they have
people
to do that, but is he in the minority of directors that cut everything?
Well, he's very involved in the editing process. I don't know how involved, but I do know... So this film has the Guinness World Record for the longest film shoot of more than 400 days. So around 15...
For one scene?
No, for the whole movie, around 15 months.
Okay.
That's the longest film shoot.
Wow.
The longest continuous film shoot.
Okay,
because
they filmed continuously for over 400
for
days.
Over 400 days, and
wow.
He committed the stars of the movie, Nicole Kidman and Tom Cruise, and the other stars, to not work on other projects while they worked on this film, right?
Wow.
So there were some other stars that were cut from the film because they had other obligations. Harvey Keitel was originally playing the role of the patient, the wealthy patient,
mm-hmm.
who was later played by, what's his
name? I could see him in that part. I don't know who played him, though.
He's a famous director, too.
Pollock. Sidney Pollock?
Sidney Pollock, yes. Harvey Keitel was playing him, and Jennifer Jason Leigh was also... They both filmed scenes for the movie. They filmed their scenes.
But they couldn't commit
They couldn't commit, so they were cut from the film. And so Sidney Pollack and another actress was brought in. But yeah, Stanley Kubrick, and the reason I say this is his magnum opus is because he was trying to get this film made for over four decades, right? So he bought the rights to the book, and he had always wanted to make a movie that revolved around sex, right?
Okay.
Or around the relationship of a couple. And this movie took so long to make, like pre-production was just decades in the making, right? And I do believe, I'm on the side that believes this was his edit and that he was pleased with what came out.
Mm-hmm.
And that, you know, I think he died in peace knowing that this was his probably his greatest work. You may disagree with that. You saw it for the first time.
I will tell you right now that as far as enjoying a movie, I enjoyed The Shining much more than Eyes Wide Shut.
Sure.
But that's not to take away from the beautifully made movie that Eyes Wide Shut is.
Mm-hmm.
I just enjoy The Shining so much more. And part of that is, I don't know, this movie is so dark.
Right.
And scary.
Right.
Like... honestly, this movie was more scary than The Shining.
Yeah, and I agree with you there. I think rewatchability, yeah, I think The Shining has a lot more rewatchability.
Uh-huh.
And I might even agree with you in saying that I enjoyed The Shining more. But I do think Eyes Wide Shut was... And when I said magnum opus, I might not even say like greatest work, even though that's what that means literally. I think like for him personally, it was his greatest
personal achievement,
right,
in film.
Right. I think that's what I mean, is that
okay.
Not necessarily...
Well, I can't really argue against that then.
Right. Not necessarily his greatest film, but definitely the one he spent the most blood and sweat on.
Sure.
Yeah. Some behind the scenes. He considered making the adaptation of the book a sex comedy at first, and he wanted it to star Steve Martin or Woody Allen.
Really? Wow.
The Steve Martin
definitely went a different direction.
Yeah. I wouldn't mind seeing the Steve Martin one, not so much the Woody Allen one.
Oh.
Yeah.
We don't talk about Woody Allen.
You want to do the song?
No, I'm
okay.
Good. We don't talk about Woody.
You did it anyways.
I know. I couldn't help myself.
Kubrick also had somewhat of a history of removing Jewish characteristics from his character adaptations. So Bill...
Was he originally supposed to be Jewish?
He wasn't named Bill in the book, but the protagonist of the book was Jewish, and he received anti-Semitic slurs in the street from a group of anti-Semitics,
mm-hmm.
whereas, you know, Bill in the movie, he's very...
American?
Very American, non-Semitic,
like,
right?
Yes.
He's just, and he receives homophobic slurs in the street in the movie, right? So I'm not saying that Kubrick is anti-Semitic, but it is kind of an erasure to just kind of remove that part, because it's not just this movie, he's done that to other movies as well, other adaptations that he's made. Which is weird, because he's worked alongside a lot of Jewish producers and screenwriters, so I don't think he's anti-Semitic. But the last name of Tom Cruise's character and Nicole Kidman's character, Harford, was derived from Harrison Ford. Harford,
oh,
right?
Okay.
Harrison Ford was who Kubrick wanted Bill to emulate.
Oh, okay.
Right? So maybe he was considering Harrison Ford at one time, but he wanted, you know, the character to emulate Harrison Ford's characteristics,
mm-hmm.
which I don't know if Tom Cruise does that at all.
Not really seeing it, but I can see, yeah, I can see what you mean.
Like Tom Cruise and Nicole Kidman both in this film, it's a little different from their other movies. Their acting, it's very cold and calculated, and the dialogue is very, like, almost unhuman. Like,
it's interesting though, because they're married during the filming of this movie, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So that wouldn't necessarily be what I would expect from an actual married couple.
Right.
You would expect a lot of, you know, chemistry. And
mm-hmm. It was almost like the time that Michael Jackson brought his wife, Lisa Marie Presley, up on stage and kissed her at the, like, VMA Awards or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it was, like, very, like, no chemistry whatsoever. Oh, no. Just like, what's he doing to that poor woman?
Oh, boy. Okay.
But not necessarily that drastic, but, yeah, it was very just unnatural almost.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was chilling.
But Alec Baldwin and Kim Basinger were considered first before Tom and Nicole. But then Tom and Nicole, they went to Kubrick's estate, which, you know, I can almost imagine as, you know, a big-ass mansion just like the one in the movie, you know?
Who knows and what happened there?
They go there to audition and they get the role.
Okay.
And I don't know what that audition process is. Who knows? We can only guess.
I would prefer not to guess. Thank you.
One interesting fact that I found, Cate Blanchett actually provided the voice of the mysterious woman. She didn't play physically the mysterious woman, but she provided the voice.
The one that saves Bill?
The one that says, you're in danger. Yeah.
Oh.
And saves him. Yeah. She
sacrifices herself.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's Cate Blanchett's voice.
Oh.
Because I guess the actress that played her physically, she's a British actress, and she Kubrick didn't think she provided a good American accent.
Okay.
So yeah, like I said, Kubrick died during post-production. Many reviews and analysis of the film focus mainly on the sexual aspects, which are, you know, they're prominent.
Yeah.
But, you know, there are other themes of the movie. You know, you can look at themes of class, of capitalism, and how they relate not only to secret societies, but to secrecy itself when it comes to wealth, right? And how wealthy people are able to keep their transactional history secret sometimes, right? Especially when it comes to shady shit.
Yeah. And there is some shady shit going down in this movie.
Should we get into the film? Any other thoughts before we get into the plot of the film?
No, I think let's jump into it.
Okay. So first scene, what do we see in the first scene?
We see butt in the first 30 seconds, Ryan.
Nicole Kidman's ass.
Yes, we do.
So she's disrobing, and then it immediately goes to credits. And you know, this is kind of, you know, there's been some commentary on this, how, you know, people went into Eyes Wide Shut thinking, oh, this is going to be a all about sex and shit. And so Kubrick, the thought is that Kubrick deliberately gives us this, and it's not even like that titillating or tantalizing. It's just her disrobing and, like, kicking her shit to the floor, right? Mm-hmm. So it's just like, oh, you get to see one of the biggest stars nude right off the bat. But that's not what this movie's going to be about.
Like a red herring?
I think so.
Kind of?
Yeah, a little bit. So Dr. Bill and Alice Harford, they're getting ready for a Christmas party at one of his patients' house, Victor Ziegler. Bill, played by Tom Cruise, sees an old medical school friend playing the piano. Nick Nightingale. This is when they arrive at the party.
Right.
So this whole movie's set during Christmas time. And, you know, just
is
like...
Is this a Christmas movie?
Just
Ryan?
Like Die Hard, I think we can consider Eyes Wide Shut a classic Christmas movie. So add another classic Christmas movie to your list, Eyes Wide Shut. Don't play for the kids. Wait till they go to bed.
Don't.
So yeah, at the party, Bill sees one of his old medical school friends, the guy playing the piano, Nick Nightingale. The couple splits at the party to mingle a bit. Alice, at this point, gets hit on by a flirtatious Hungarian old man.
A silver Hungarian fox, Ryan.
I mean, you seem pretty old to me. I don't know.
Silver fox.
Okay.
He had gray hair, you know.
Yeah. Pretty attractive, I guess. And I don't remember. He seemed pretty old to me when I first saw him.
I mean, Nicole Kidman doesn't have a problem.
Right. Bill is, you know, he starts flirting with two models. But then he's brought by Ziegler, his wealthy patient and the host of the party, to a room where Ziegler has been fucking one of the guests, a naked woman. She's sitting there on a chair. She's OD'd on some speedballs, right? Some heroin and
completely
cocaine.
Passed out or whatever, right. Unresponsive.
But Bill's able to save her, and he commits her to, you know, go to rehab and get some help, right?
Yes.
And she says, I'm going to get some help. She seems pretty committed to that.
With the understanding from his patient, Mr. Ziegler, that this, you know, everything that happened here stays here.
All on the DL. Right?
Yes.
The next scene, Bill and Alice are making out naked in front of the mirror at their home. This is the scene I remember from the trailer of the movie when it came out.
That was in the trailer?
So, obviously, they couldn't show nudity in the trailer, but, you know, the part where Nicole Kidman is covering her boobs with her arms.
Still, it's like a Red Band trailer.
No, I really remember seeing this on TV where it was like Chris Isaacs did a bad, bad thing. The music is playing. And that music plays in the movie, too. But
yeah, okay.
I just remember seeing that trailer. I don't know if
and
it was
you still
Red Band.
Wanted to see the movie?
I definitely wanted to see the movie at that point. That's what got me into the theater. No. So, yeah, this scene, I couldn't help but think, wow, Tom Cruise is so tiny. He must be, like, standing on his tiptoes right now.
Yeah.
Because Nicole Kidman, she's pretty tall.
She's pretty tall, and he's noticeably shorter than her.
If you look at paparazzi pictures of them, they're not even similar in height. So, like, in this scene, he must be standing on something,
yeah.
Whether it's tiptoes or what.
Sitting on a couple of phone books.
Then we get some scenes of Bill at work and Alice at home. Later, though, Bill and Alice are smoking marijuana in bed, which she gets from the Band-Aid jar in the medicine cabinet.
Very convenient.
Yeah, a good hiding spot, I think, for some MJ, some Kush.
I could just see, like, their kid going into the bathroom and being like, I need
a Band-Aid. Looking for a Band-Aid.
You know, whatever. That works for them.
Mommy, there's oregano in the medicine cabinet.
So they're sitting there smoking some spliffs in bed, and they discuss infidelity and
mm-hmm.
temptation. Alice reveals that she previously was close to leaving Bill and her daughter to start a new life with a naval officer that she met, but that she fantasized about having an affair with.
Do you remember one night in the dining room, there was this young naval officer?
No.
He glanced at me as he walked past, just a glance. But I could hardly move. If he wanted me, I was ready to give up everything. You, Helena.
That she just met.
That right, she didn't do anything with you, but she has fantasies about him. Right?
Yeah, she says, like, have you ever met someone and you just know you would run away with that person?
Right.
Change your whole life.
Right. And you can tell, like you can tell that she has, like, this thing about putting fidelity above her own needs, right? Above her own
right. Well, even
desires.
From the beginning when she's dancing with the silver Hungarian fox and
right.
they're talking about infidelity because he wants to, like, take her upstairs or whatever. Or, I don't know.
Right.
And she's like, no, I'm married. And she's drunk at that. Point even in the
right
at the party, and she rebuffs his advances,
but you can also tell
kind of lingering,
right? This is some lingering feelings,
yeah.
Right? And you can tell that desires, and there's some things that the couple just hasn't talked about up until now,
mm-hmm.
and things, and when it comes out, they get uncomfortable, and especially Bill, he doesn't want to talk about these
yeah.
things. It's way too uncomfortable for him, even though they're, you know, natural desires. Anyway, so Bill gets a call from the daughter of one of his patients who has died. So he goes to the house where his patient is, and the daughter tells Bill that she loves him. She tries to, you know, make an advance on him, tries to seduce him, but, you know, he's like, whoa, back off, lady.
He's like, I barely know you.
Yeah.
Like, what's going on?
And then she's like, but I love you.
So, like, the exact theme... The exact thing that his wife described to him in her past
yeah.
just happened to him, like, from the other side.
Right.
There's, like, this weird mirroring thing
right.
that happens right there.
And there's this thing where Bill begins to imagine his wife fucking this naval officer, right?
Yeah, you get these, like, dream flashbacks. From that point on in the film, it keeps coming back up.
And he knows, she told him, nothing happened between them, that it was just a fantasy. But
she
even
really
so,
wanted to.
Yeah, but even so, he can't help but imagine his wife with this other guy, and it kills him, right?
I think he feels betrayed.
Right.
You know?
But then he ends up telling her, you know, during that conversation, you know, I would never, you know, do this and that to you. But then he gets into these situations later in the movie where it's like he kind of betrays that trust himself.
Mm-hmm. Right? I think part of him is just like, well, fuck it. If my wife, you know, wants to go do stuff, I'm going to go try to do some stuff.
Right. So he's stewing with jealousy over the thought of his wife with this other guy. And he's walking down the sidewalk. I mentioned he gets accosted by some frat bros there. He gets some homophobic.
You know what? What's wrong with dressing nice, Ryan?
Yeah.
You know, why can't a guy just dress nice and we don't speculate on his, you know, sexual orientation?
Right, yeah. And it's very funny, the, you know, going back to the themes of class in this movie,
mm-hmm.
like he's a wealthy guy, right?
Yeah.
He's got like a decent apartment with his wife. He's a surgeon or whatever, but there is a class below him and a class above him, right? Like
sure.
When he goes to this party later on in the film, this is like
he realizes, he's out of his league.
This is the upper echelon. Yeah. After being accosted by the frat bros, he meets Domino, a sex worker. She invites him back to her place for a rendezvous. She asks him, what does he want? He says, you know, you tell me.
What is, oh, yeah.
What do I recommend? Well, I'd rather not put it into words. How about you just leave it up to me?
I'm in your hands.
Okay.
I'm in your hands or something.
Yeah, something like that. But before they can do anything, they kiss, right?
Yeah.
But before they can go any further, Alice calls Bill. And so nothing happens. You know, she's wondering where he is.
Right.
He pays Domino for the sex they didn't have. And he goes to a jazz club where he meets up with the piano player, Nick.
Mm-hmm.
It's funny, the autocorrect on my notes that I've taken, I take notes on my phone, and the autocorrect, I wanted to put Nick tells Bill, but it autocorrected to Much tells Bull.
Okay.
So I almost just said that.
Much tells Bull. You just Much read whatever Bull. Is on the teleprompter, Ryan. You just need to change that.
I'm Ron Burgundy?
Fuck you, San Diego!
Much tells Bull. Nick tells Bill. Nick tells Bill about a secret party that a bunch of wealthy people are going to have where he plays the piano
mm-hmm.
blindfolded.
Right? But last time he went, the blindfold was a little loose.
Right. So
and the women were exquisite, he says.
Got some peaks there.
Mm-hmm.
But to enter the party, you need a costume, you need a mask, and you need a password.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So Nick sees the password that, or I'm sorry, Bill sees the password that Nick scrolls on the napkin. It's Fidelio.
Well, I'm on my way right now. Okay, sir. Thank you. Bye-bye.
What is this?
It's the name of a Beethoven opera, isn't it?
Nick. It's the password. The password. You know there is no way on Earth you're going to leave here tonight without taking me with you.
Fidelio.
Which is, I think he says it's one of Beethoven's symphonies or something.
Something like that.
Yeah. So Bill goes out. He wants to go to this party, right? He doesn't want to go back home to his wife who fantasizes about cheating.
And is really crazy when she's high, apparently.
Yeah. So he wants to go to this party. He gets a costume and takes a taxi to the mansion that Nick tells him about. There's some interesting characters in the costume scene.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if we want to talk about that too much. It's like,
can I just say, I don't think he really thought out his plan very well.
Right.
He, like, told the taxi guy to, like, sit out in front of the mansion and wait for it. Like, just keep the meter running. I'll be back. He knows.
He tears up a $100 bill in half and says, you wait here. I'll give you one half now, and I'll give you the other half when I get back.
What a crazy dude.
What an asshole. Seriously, if I'm the taxi driver, what an asshole.
I'm like, see you, dude. Get your own ride home.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So inside, masked individuals are pairing off, right? They're having orgies and all kinds of sexual encounters. Mm. And there were a lot of like digital scrubbing of genitalia that was done for this film.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of, you know, just very convenient things covering. And
it just reminded me of the Austin Powers scene where he's naked and being covered by, like, a potted plant or something or whatever.
Well, yeah. Like, one, he moves and then something else pops over to, like, cover it as he walks over or whatever. Yeah.
But then Bill is warned by the mysterious masked woman that he's in danger. And at this point, he's taken before a tribunal of masked individuals. And his mask is removed.
I seem to have forgotten it.
That's unfortunate. Because here, it doesn't matter whether you have forgotten it or if you never knew it. You will kindly remove your mask.
Yeah, but, I mean, you didn't even mention, like, the whole crazy ceremony thing. I guess we already talked about that a little
bit.
Yeah,
I mean, it is crazy, and I don't know how much you want to talk about that.
No,
yeah,
we don't need to talk about it anymore. I just want to make sure that that's in the plot.
I mean, just a whole lot of ritualistic baloney. I mean, I don't know how to explain it.
I mean, so, you've seen the movie Midsommar.
Yes.
Like, did you get any, like, Midsommar kind of vibes from this movie, too?
Yeah, so, I mean, Midsommar is, you know, very pagan, ritualistic, and there's lots of, I guess you could call it paganism in this film. Crazy, ritualistic, what the fuck is going on, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, I think I have that feeling almost every rewatch of this film. Even though you know what's going to happen, and you know what's going on, but it's like, holy shit, you know, it makes you think. Are there secret societies like that? And then there's like a confirmation in your subconscious. Yes.
I used to be one.
Not just that, but I don't know. Like, I honestly believe there are secret societies.
Like just like this, you think?
Just like this. I mean,
that's crazy, man.
The Masons themselves. The Masons have existed for what? Hundreds of years now?
Yeah.
And I'm not saying they're like this film, but there are secret societies that do some... what you would consider some creepy shit, right?
Mm, yeah. By the way, the masks.
Yeah.
How did they get such creepy freaking masks? They like they look really realistic.
Yeah.
But just like frozen faces.
Yeah.
Right?
So, the masks terrified me.
These weren't Mardi Gras masks. They were like legit.
Right.
These aren't even like masquerade masks that are fancy. He's kind of wearing like a jeweled one, but... Like,
I think this is kind of Kubrick's throwback to the novel because the novel is set in 1920s Florentine, so Italy.
Oh.
And so and it's set not during Christmas, but during Carnival.
Okay.
So these are Carnival masks. I think they're Florentine, like Victorian era, like type masks.
They're creepy as fuck.
Yeah.
They are.
So.
He gets his mask taken off.
His mask is removed. The mysterious woman steps forward on his behalf, and you know she gives herself up basically as sacrifice. You know, we don't know exactly what's going to happen to her, but
you get an idea. I mean, it's like
it's hinted that
blood atonement.
That what she's doing,
shit.
Right? That what she's doing is like it comes at a major cost.
This is the way,
right? So who knows? Did they kill her? We
we do find out that
right,
but is it ambiguous?
Stanley Kubrick. Is the king of ambiguity.
He is.
And let's talk about it a little bit later
with
Tom Cruise's scene with Sidney Pollack where they're talking because
I think
that's where a lot of ambiguity comes up.
Right.
So Bill is warned by the tribunal, by the master of ceremony, to never disclose anything to anyone about what happened. And he returns home.
He could sell them for money.
No, he could. Alice, when he... goes home. Alice awakes from a dream that she tells Bill about, kind of a sexual dream, nightmare, whatever you want to call it. The next day, Bill finds out that Nick has disappeared. Right, the piano player, his friend Nick,
and he sees weird people following him, like right. a man in a trench coat.
He's being followed by these mysterious strangers.
Mm-hmm.
He goes to Domino's apartment and finds out from her roommate that she was just recently diagnosed that morning as HIV positive, which is like, whew, dodged a bullet there, I guess. And you know, there's ambiguity insists with this film because you can interpret the following events
differently.
Like you say, he's being followed by mysterious figures. He finds out that the woman he saved from the OD, Mandy, has died. And in the paper, he recognizes her as the mysterious woman from the party, right?
Mm-hmm.
But again, is it her?
He goes to the morgue to look at the body.
Right, but she was masked at the time.
I think Tom Cruise would remember those nipples. I just do. I think he would.
They were lovely nipples.
I almost said the same thing. I was like, Tom Cruise, he was checking those tits out
remembers.
The whole time.
You know, he has a picture of those things in his brain.
Yeah.
It seemed like at the morgue that he was convinced that it was her, though, right?
Right.
Whether or not, I guess, in all full reality it was.
Right.
He
went to the morgue to identify her body. And,
yeah.
Yeah.
Skipping forward, when he goes to see his friend, Buddy does admit that it was her.
Yes. But... No, he admits that it was Mandy.
At the party, who said that she would take his place and that she overdosed.
Oh, okay. No, okay, you're right.
You've been way out of your depth for the last 24 hours. You want to know what kind of a charade? I'll tell you exactly what kind. That whole play-acted, take-me, phony sacrifice that you've been jerking yourself off with had absolutely nothing to do with her real death. Nothing happened to her after you left that party that hadn't happened to her before. She got her brains fucked out. Period. When they took her home, she was just fine. She was a junkie. She OD'd.
So it was her.
He does confirm later that it was her. He just tries to like bullshit it and be like, it was a coincidence.
Okay,
keep
this in because this is important. So I think you're right that, okay, I forgot that Sidney Pollack admitted that Mandy was the same girl. Okay, but yeah, like you say, his excuse is that she OD'd. Right, and so, yeah, Ziegler, he goes to see Ziegler. Ziegler informs Bill that he also attended the party, and he tries to convince him that Mandy's death has nothing to do with the intimidation and threats of the party host, right? And he also tries to convince Bill that the threats are empty, but that they are capable of carrying out the threats, but... It's just intimidation.
Right. But then doesn't he also try to convince him that it was all a setup just to fuck with him?
Right. Right. Kind of like the game.
Yeah.
Right. When he gets home, Bill sees the mask on his pillow next to his wife. He has an emotional breakdown at this point and discloses everything to her. All the details.
Yes.
The next day, they go Christmas shopping with their daughter and express gratitude to each other that their love has survived this ordeal. Bill says the word forever, and Alice says, let's not use that word, it frightens me. The last thing she says, but there's one thing we should do.
The important thing is we're awake now, and hopefully for a long time to come.
Forever.
Let's not use that word. It frightens me, but I do love you, and you know, there is something very important that we need to do as soon as possible.
What's that?
Fuck.
Fade to black.
Fade to black. Yeah. Yeah, and that's eyes wide shut for you.
I mean, that'll just fix everything. It'll fix all your problems, right? You know.
So, you know, should we talk more about the ambiguity of this film and,
sure.
and whether or not... Well, what do you think? Do you think that they were just fucking with Tom and that Mandy just OD'd?
I mean, after going through that entire journey, it's hard for me to believe him. I mean, he's doing shady shit with secret passwords and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Can you really trust anything that he says anyway?
Ziegler, yeah.
Yeah, and then, like I said, after going on that journey with Tom Cruise's character, it's hard for me to think that it was anything but... real and that it actually happened the
yeah.
way that we saw it.
Right. And I don't think I fall on one side or the other, because honestly, I think the ambiguity is so good there that it's like, especially how it relates to what modern day wealthy people are capable of, right? Like, you just don't know.
Yeah.
Right? Like, modern people, modern day, Jesus, I'm so drunk right now. Modern day wealthy people could be capable of just gaslighting you into believing something, or they could be capable of carrying out murders, right? So you just never know. Wealth buys everything.
That is true.
But,
okay, cool. Well, I'm going to let you go first, Ryan, and just give your overall thoughts of the film, and then let's give it some golden idols.
Okay. Yeah, this isn't my favorite Kubrick film. I do think that I like The Shining the most. And then I would probably put this as number two of Kubrick films for me.
I mean, he has some great ones.
Yeah, 2001 would probably be number three, Clockwork Orange after that, and then maybe Full Metal Jacket.
Okay.
He's got some other ones, some really good ones. Barry Lyndon's really good. But yeah, while not being the best Kubrick film, I do believe this, for him personally, was his magnum opus. He worked so long on getting this film to the public. And while I don't think he's the best guy or the best human, I think he's probably one of the best directors we've ever had. And the performances may have been cold and stilted, but I think they were great performances, because I think the story kind of required their relationship to be like that, very cold.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I just love the cinematography of the film, the background of it being set during Christmas. I think it's a great Christmas film. I'm going to give
this... If you want to have nightmares during Christmas time, watch this movie.
I think I gave The Shining... I think I gave The Shining a perfect score.
Uh-huh.
Now, hold on a second. Is The Shining a Christmas film?
The Shining?
Yeah. Is that set during Christmas or just the winter?
Just winter.
Okay.
Just snow. No Christmas. All right.
Darn it.
Don't ruin Christmas for me, Ryan.
So yeah, I gave The Shining a perfect score. I'm going to give this one a 4.5. Golden
four and a half. So just a little lower than The Shining.
Just a little bit.
Just a little bit. Awesome. Well, you know, I'm going to give my final thoughts as well. One thing that we failed to talk about that was really an important part of the movie and that stood out to me was the music.
Yes.
And the score. Because that was maybe the most terrifying part of the whole film. And my God, like, it's like two notes over and over again.
Yeah.
And there's something so eerie and jarring and just really unsettling about it. And it honestly made parts of the movie hard for me to watch because it was so freaking intense.
It was intense.
It almost reminded me of, like, the Jaws theme where you have just the two notes, da-na, or, like, the Halloween theme when it's kind of just a couple of notes over and over changing keys. It was eerie and unsettling for me, so I just had to point that out.
Now, I think most of the score was, like, not original. I think most of it was derived from, like, classical composers, not mistaken. But, yeah, whatever he chose to use for the film, it was very effective. And very, it added to the creepy atmosphere of this cult film, right? You're going down the rabbit hole into this cult, and, yeah, it got me.
Yeah, for sure. So just adding a little note about that, I want to say that I enjoyed the movie.
It's hard to say.
But it's a little bit, it's not like I enjoyed the movie.
On first viewing, it's hard to, yeah.
I'll say it was very effective, I think, what Stanley Kubrick's vision was.
Sure.
It made me think about those heavy themes in the film. Maybe a little bit of PTSD with the culty stuff. But at the end of the day, for me, I have to really, really enjoy a film to give it a really high score.
Sure.
So I'm going to have to go with, I'm going to say a 3.5. Just
pretty good.
For the quality of the filmmaking. Because it is a high quality film.
It's a hard film to rewatch.
I was going to say, I will probably never watch this movie ever again.
Really? I think
you never say never. I could circle back and If I want to have nightmares again someday, maybe I'll come back and watch
when, this. When December comes.
Next Christmas time.
When we have our Christmas decorations up.
Christmas Eve.
I think you're going to want to watch this film again.
Christmas Eve.
Let's have an Eyes Wide Shut
rematch. Sure, you know, like a nice fire in the fireplace and the stockings hung with hair.
Oh, we should have an Eyes Wide Shut theme party. Oh,
holy shit.
No, just the masks.
Just the masks and the capes and everything. Wow. I mean, that's intense. Okay, so 3.5 Golden Idols, like I said, just on the merit of the filmmaking alone, and not necessarily because I really loved watching the movie.
Right. So was it just difficult the whole way through, or just certain elements?
No, I don't know, man. It was just freaking me out.
Hey, you don't have to explain yourself. More than you have. You've explained yourself pretty well.
It was a hard watch at times.
Yeah.
Some parts were not as hard to watch. I'm not going to go in. Never
right.
mind.
I get that.
Yeah. You can imagine some of the parts that weren't as hard to watch. Okay.
Right.
That's all I'm saying.
Hey, I'm with you there. I enjoyed a lot of parts of this film. not just the titillating scenes.
You know
come
what?
On.
And now we can't stop giggling about it.
I'm not that shallow. Anyways, that's our review and analysis of Eyes Wide Shut. We hope you guys enjoyed. Please tune in to next week's podcast. Josh is going to choose a movie right now.
Yeah, let's go. Okay, I'm going to need the list.
Okay. Sorry, I should have had that.
No, it's all good. We kind of go through this at the end of every pod, so.
Except.
I'm just wondering. So we did a comedy and kind of like a crazy, horror-y, suspense-y kind of movie. Okay. I'm going to choose a movie.
Okay.
One that I've been wanting to watch for a while. Is this one?
Okay. Yeah,
Quentin. I want to watch Django Unchained.
Nice. Have we done a Quentin Tarantino? We haven't.
We have.
Which one did... Oh, Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction.
Of course. His magnum.
I'm surprised that I knew that.
Well, let's do another one. Why not?
Yeah. I really enjoyed this film, and I'm excited to talk about all the shenanigans that Leonardo DiCaprio and Jamie Foxx get into. So, yeah.
Right on.
All right.
I'm excited.
Well, tune in next week where we'll discuss Django Unchained. And again, thank you for listening, and we hope to hear from you next week, or we hope to, God damn it. I am too drunk to end this podcast. Can you end it for me?
Yes. Everyone, thank you for listening. Please don't have any nightmares after watching. Sleep with your eyes wide open. Good evening.
Good night.
Checking those tits out the whole time.